From Vancouver, we present the fifth and concluding episode of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The Kraken Wakes, Episode 5. Been on the verge of disaster for several years, fighting an invasion by alien forces from another planet, which occupied the deepest parts of the oceans. The seas soon became unsafe for shipping because the deep-sea foe could shake the largest vessel to bits in minutes using a weapon of a vibratory type. Harbors became clogged with rusting ships, and air transport moved people and goods. At the peak of the Battle of the Deep, thousands of people lost their lives when the enemy squadrons of sea tanks, huge slug-like affairs, came ashore at night to attack coastal areas in many parts of the world. Eventually, the raids stopped and governments relaxed. So did many people. The new method of assault from the depths did not become apparent for several months. When transatlantic airline pilots reported unusually dense and widespread fog in the West Atlantic, the reports were filed and forgotten. With shipping still virtually non-existent, the authorities were not concerned with fog. But in certain circles, there were people who compared notes and came to conclusions about the unusual conditions. Among them were Mike and Phyllis Watson, who were covering the story for the English Broadcasting Company.
The garden is rather chilly this summer, Mrs. Watson. I thought it would be better if we met inside.
It's more than chilly, Dr. Matte. It's cold.
It's nice to have this fire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, partly the result of the shipping problem, Mr. Watson. It has resulted in such a reduced demand for steel that we have now a surplus of coal. Now, take a look at this large map with the colored pins. The blue ones represent fog concentrations. The red pins are for icebergs.
It does tie in with what Captain Winters told us about the unusual amounts of broken ice in Davis Strait.
And the sea north of Baffin Bay is crammed with icebergs.
Captain Winters said that you'd been on an aerial tour of that area, Dr. Matte.
Yes, I was. You see this high Greenland ice cap? The glaciers that run down from it are calving. I have seen icebergs form before, but never on anything like the scale it is taking place there. The great ice cliffs, hundreds of feet high, are crumbling at an unusual rate and creating countless bergs as big as small islands.
And judging by the red pins on your map, it's happening elsewhere, too.
Indeed it is. Everywhere in the Arctic and in the Antarctic, too.
What do you make of it?
Well, for one thing, the unusual ice conditions readily account for the dense fog off Newfoundland. Elsewhere, I ascribe the fogs to deep-running cold currents forced upwards into the warm water above by encounters with submarine mountains.
Did you ever see such a gloomy summer, Phyllis?
Oh, it's dreadful.
Harold said I must be off my rocker to want to spend a weekend at your cottage in Cornwall. Mm-hmm. But I said any place is better than London in such depressing weather.
Well, at least the winds along the coast shift the fogs occasionally. Do you know, last weekend we had sun for 4 hours.
Mm.
Oh, it was glorious. And of course, it does mean traveling by train now that petrol's rationed. Although Mike does rate a priority card from EBC.
Oh, isn't he doing a series on icebergs?
On climate and how it affects our way of life.
Oh, yes. Well, as Harold says, it's very clever of the scientists to know so much about icebergs and fogs and so on. But it doesn't seem to be much good knowing if they can't do something about it. Well, what exasperates me is that they don't stop them doing it.
Well, Tuny, stopping icebergs is probably pretty difficult.
No, I mean stopping the Russians from making icebergs.
Oh, dear. Tuny, do you still think it's the Russians?
Is that you, Mike?
Yes, Phil. Wait till you see tonight's paper.
Why? Well, what's happened?
Old Buck has done it again. He stuck his neck out a mile. They were interviewing him about the icebergs and the fogs, and he let fly.
Do tell.
Now, listen to what Buck told the fellow from the Evening Herald. The Arctic and Antarctic ice caps have been scattering their icebergs into the seas since before there were men to know of it. But why, in this year, should they suddenly spawn 10, 20 times as many icebergs? There must be a reason for this. There is.
Cuny claims it's the Russians.
She's a scatterbrain. Dr. Bocker also said, if some means of melting the Arctic ice were put into operation, a little time would have to pass before its effects became noticeable. Moreover, the effects would be progressive. First a trickle, then a gush, then a torrent. I have seen estimates which suggest that if the polar ice were melted, the sea level would rise by 100 feet. That is no more than a round figure guess. Are you following, darling?
Yes. Oh, boy, the old man certainly has a lot of nerve. Just imagine the uproar this latest theory will trigger.
Yes, that's not all. Bocker also said, in this connection, I draw attention to the fact that in January of this year, the mean sea level at Newlyn, where it is customarily measured, was reported to have risen by 2.5 inches.
Oh, dear. Of all the pertinacious stickers out of necks.
We'd better go and have a chat with him, if he hasn't already done.
See, by the pile of mail, as it hasn't gone unnoticed, you'll probably be contaminated if you associate with me. In most countries, I'd be under arrest by now.
Dr. Bucker, do you really like to have people throwing things at you?
I get impatient, Mike.
And one day, you'll get hurt. Now, to ordinary people, 2.5 inches is just a very slightly higher mark on a post. Well, after your build-up, it sounded so tiddly that everyone feels annoyed with you for alarming them.
Now, quite a lot of people have been alarmed, or at least indignant. And that was what I wanted. You know well enough how it has been since the beginning of this business. At every stage, the great majority, and particularly the authorities, have resisted the evidence as long as they could. Very reluctantly, the existence of something in the deeps was belatedly conceded. Now here we are again, balking at the newest hurdle.
But what about the Americans?
Same attitude. If anything, a bit more so. Business is their national sport, and like most national sports, semi-sacred. The still bigger slump that they've been having since the shipping troubles started wouldn't help anyone. So we all watched and waited.
We?
A number of people have been well aware of what must be going on, though not, of course, how it's being done. But for one reason or another, not excluding government pressure, they've been keeping quiet about it.
And now you've decided to force the government's hand.
Yes. But not alone. This time I have the company of a number of eminent and very worried men. Mine was only the opening shot on this side of the Atlantic. As for the American end, just take a peek at Life magazine and look next week.
What can be done?
That is strictly between ourselves. The only possible thing that I can see for them to do is to organize salvage, to make sure that certain things and people are not lost. The rest, we'll have to take their chances.
Melting the Arctic seems a pretty formidable proposition. Do you have a theory on how it's being done?
Well, we know that they have some kind of device that will project a jet of water with considerable force. The bottom sediment that was washed up into surface currents during their submarine mining operations pretty well proved that. Well, a contraption like that, used in conjunction with a heater, say an atomic reaction pile, ought to be capable of generating a quite considerable warm current.
But do they have atomic fission?
We don't know. So far, there's been no indication that they have. And unless you count our presenting them with at least one atomic bomb that didn't go off.
And the iceberg angle?
That's less difficult. There's pretty general agreement that if one has a vibratory type of weapon that can cause a large ship to fall to pieces, there ought to be no difficulty in causing even a huge lump of ice to crack.
And nobody knows of anything we can do.
It boils down to this, Phyllis. We simply don't think the same way as our enemy. Practically all of our strategy of defense or attack is based on our ability to deliver or resist missiles of one kind or another. Whereas they don't seem to be interested in missiles.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, 4. How do you read me now, Bert? Good. Yes, standing by. Yes,
I'm on the roof of an EBC van parked on Vauxhall Bridge. Yeah, yes, ready when you are. Okay, here goes. This is Michael Watson reporting for the English Broadcasting Company from Westminster. From our vantage point on Vauxhall Bridge, we have an excellent view of the scene. The spring tides will reach their peak any moment now. In London, the riverside walls have been reinforced and topped for their whole length with sandbags. Cars and buses are still running on the bridge, but as a precaution, traffic has been diverted from the embankment. However, the curious crowds have turned out to throng it and the bridges. The police have done their best to keep them moving, but in spite of the steady drizzle, people dawdle from one point to another watching the slow rise of the water. The water is now lapping above the parapet and against the sandbags. Here and there, it's beginning to trickle through onto the pavements. Those whistles are signals for firemen, civil defense, and police to rush sandbags to reinforce wherever the trickle enlarges. The pace is getting hotter by the second now. Spectators are helping, dashing from one point to another as new leaks start up in the dikes. The warning signals are being given. There's no doubt what's going to happen, and people are withdrawing. Any moment now... Yes, there she goes. The breakthrough has happened. On the north bank, in a dozen places at once, gaps several yards wide have appeared through which muddy water is pouring. From where we are on Vauxhall Bridge, we're able to see three separate rivers pouring into the streets of Westminster, filling basements and cellars. Stand by, please. Thank you. Justin handed a note. The Victoria Embankment is flooded. On the south bank, the water is breaking into the streets of Lambeth, Southwark, and Bermondsey. Downriver Limehouse is getting it badly. There seems to be little that can be done now but wait for the tide to drop and then rush the repairs against its next rise. But you can be sure there will be plenty of damage claims resulting from this.
Requisitioned all the available earth-moving machinery.
Yes, quite a feat of organization. It seems that every seaboard community and low-lying area is clamoring for them simultaneously.
Well, it's done something for morale, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
People are out in the thousands today to watch the concrete blocks going up on both banks.
Yes, I wonder how high they'll go before the futility comes home to them. However, I suppose that from a propaganda point of view, some kind of show of activity is necessary. Of course, all over the world, the threat's the same. Low-lying places like Florida and Louisiana have resigned themselves to disappearing completely from the new maps.
Fortunately, people don't seem to be panicking.
Yes, not yet. But hadn't you noticed? Those with the wisdom and the means have already started moving out and up.
Well, the EBC decided that, as a matter of policy, an emergency broadcasting unit would be maintained here.
Oh. Did you volunteer?
Yes, Mike and I voted to stick around and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope the ABC picked some high-level spot.
Well, they've leased the top two floors of a large department store near Marble Arch.
Mm-hmm. About 75 feet above sea level. I should have thought that somewhere higher, like Hampstead or Highgate, would have been better.
Neither of them is quite London.
Well, things probably won't be too bad for a while. The real trouble will come with the next spring tides. By that time, let's hope enough people will have had the sense to do a bit of advance.
We've decided it was high time you left your flat and took up residence in our EBC emergency fortress.
Yes, but can anybody sleep with all that clutter?
Oh, don't worry, Phyllis. The living quarters on the floor above are quite soundproof. Come into my office for a bit.
Freddie, there are still some things I'm not quite clear about.
Now let's review the current situation. Tomorrow I have to fly up to Harrogate. Now, according to this confidential memo, the government's orderly scheme of evacuation has proved to be just the opposite.
It's not surprising, really.
More than two-thirds of the country's population anxious to move on to higher ground. They didn't have a hope of checking the pressure.
But bad as it is here, it's still worse elsewhere. Loss of life has been small. There have been plenty of warning. But the authorities are concerned about the growing tension in the higher areas. Those already in possession have organized themselves to prevent their being swamped by the two converging streams of refugees. from the east and from London.
Yes, I interviewed some refugees only a few days ago, and they said that as they approached Hampstead and Highgate, they began to encounter barricades in the streets and then weapons.
And districts that are not flooded yet are beginning to catch the panic.
Fortunately, the police are continuing to patrol, so there's at least a semblance of law and order.
Yes, but for how long, do you think?
Now, let's face it, Freddie, there's a growing sense of breakdown.
Nevertheless, our job as broadcasters is to help the government to restore a degree of order before things get completely out of hand.
Now I understand why Parliament moved so quickly to Yorkshire. Harrogate's a comfortable 700 feet above normal sea level.
One thing I'd like to get clear is the role EBC is supposed to play, at least as far as this London outpost is concerned.
The idea is that we here are to preserve, as far as possible, the impression of business as usual.
From the look of things here, all the reserves of diesel oil and petrol and food, we should be able to hang on for quite a time.
That's what everyone's hoping for, because headquarters is anxious to take the pulse of events wherever they happen.
I wonder what Nelson would think of the view his statue is getting now. Northumberland Avenue, partly submerged, seagulls perched on the column instead of pigeons. Whatever became of all the pigeons in Trafalgar Square?
It looks more like Venice than London. And as for the pigeons, I expect they've all been trapped and eaten.
At least things aren't as bad as they were several months ago. Now that the gangs have gone, we can wander about in safety again.
Then why are you carrying that gun?
Habit, I suppose.
Oh, dear, if only it wasn't so bitterly cold. Here it is midsummer, and it feels more like midwinter. Were you surprised when Freddie and Alice pulled out?
Oh, not surprised, so much as disappointed. After all, when we started the special unit over a year ago, he was the one who pushed the business-as-usual idea.
Well, I know that Alice had become very depressed with the state of things. And I can't say I blame her.
Cheer up, darling. If it will make you feel any better, I'll apply for a transfer, too. And by the time it comes through, the water level shouldn't rise more than another 8 or 9 feet. I'll give Freddie a call and get the lay of things up that way.
What is it, Mike?
Freddie was right when he warned us to stay put here. Look at this message we're to radiate. A call to all loyal citizens to support their legally elected government against any attempts that might be made to overthrow it by force.
Meaning that such an attempt is already being made. It ties in with what Bert picked up on the Marine Band.
About armed groups trying to break into the Harrogate administration area. Yes, it could.
The strangest thing is the complete silence on the BBC wavelength.
Yes, you know, that's hard to account for. Even if the headquarters of both broadcasting systems in Yorkshire have been overrun, there should be emergency units like us still on the air independently in Scotland and Northern Ireland.
Mike, all we know of what's been happening beyond this immediate area is what the people at headquarters have chosen to let us know. Freddie wouldn't have spoken the way he did if things were not much worse there than they are here. Oh, Mike, I don't think I can stand this desolation much longer.
But where is there to go, if we could go?
Well, there's the cottage. Oh, it wouldn't be so bad there in the country. There'd be things growing and not everything dying like this. There's no hope here.
But even if we could make it to Cornwall, we'd need food and fuel.
Well, there's plenty of tin stuff here. We could take enough to keep us going until we could grow things. And there'd be fish and plenty of driftwood for fuel. But to stay here just to be drowned or starved and forced into destroying one another to live.
All right, darling, we'll go. We're liable to get ourselves shot at. Trespassers in any district are given ruthless treatment nowadays. The trip by road used to be 268.8 miles.
But our chances would be better traveling by water.
And we'll need a boat large enough to carry supplies to keep us going. It would be suicide to try scrounging along the way.
Don't forget guns and ammunition. We can travel by night and hide out.
What's holding us up? I don't want to use the torch.
It's a net right across the street.
Well, hang on. I'll cut a hole for the boat to get through.
Step back to where you came from, son.
We only want to go through to get home to Cornwall.
Cornwall? It's impossible. Let's get back and get stuck.
Okay, we'll get back.
Where are we now? shore, Mike?
I'm not sure. It's difficult to identify anything from the map. I don't like to admit it, but it does begin to look as if Cornwall may be impossible.
There's no future in our going back to London. It's bound to get worse all the time, and sooner or later we should have to get out of it somehow. The city is just a desert of bricks and stones. So in the country, you do have a chance.
Well, have you thought about what we'll do if we get to the cottage only to find someone occupying it? Well, it took a month to get here, but we made it.
Thank God no one's in the place.
Obviously, a number of people have made use of it, judging by the mess. Everything's gone from the kitchen down to the last packet of pepper and the candles.
Well, let's check the cellar.
They took the drum of oil and all the coal.
But not the food.
Food?
I didn't want to tell you about it until I knew. Oh, it would have been too bitterly disappointing if it had gone.
What food?
Well, while you were in Ireland, I walled off that end of the cellar with bricks. There's a place nearly 3 feet by 18 filled with non-perishables.
But that was ages ago, before the flooding even began.
I know, but not before they began sinking ships so fast. It seemed to me it would be a good thing to lay in stores just in case.
Why didn't you tell me?
Well, I knew you'd just get stuffy about it.
Stuffy?
Well, there are some people who seem to think it's more ethical to pay black market prices than to take sensible precautions.
Did you brick it up yourself?
Yes, I did. Well, I didn't want anybody local to know. Oh, that's why my hands were such a mess for a time. Do you remember?
Ah, yes.
You thought it was the gardening.
Yes, well, it certainly puts us in a much better position. We can eat now for a long time if we ration ourselves.
Well, let's get busy now and tidy the place up so that we can settle in before dark.
Well, I hope that does the trick. Those iron nails rust through very quickly, but they're all I can find.
Oh, do you really think this old boat will hold together at sea?
We'll just have to chance it, Phil. We might last out here another winter, but it would leave us virtually without provisions. And less fit to face a journey that will have to be made sometime.
The cold I can't stand. Even the sea itself freezes well out from the shore.
I'll rig the mast tomorrow so that we can continue to sail southeast when the fuel tank runs dry.
At least we can try to find a place where it might be possible to grow things. Perhaps we'll find only bullets wherever we try to land. Even that will be better than slow starvation and bitter cold.
It's a gamble, of course, but we've no alternative. And now I better get the valve timing right on this wheezy old engine. If you'll just turn the flywheel.
Mike, it's a gun.
What?
There's someone coming.
Ahoy there. Is your name Watson?
Yes.
Ah, good. Got a message for you. Michael and Phyllis Watson used to be on EBC.
That's right.
They've been putting your name out on the wireless.
Who? Who has?
Council for Reconstruction, they call themselves. They've been putting out a broadcast every night for a week now. Every time they end up a list of people they're trying to find. Your names were among them last night. Believed to be in the neighborhood of Pen Lynn, Cornwall. I remembered seeing you at the pub in the old days. So I reckoned you'd better know about it.
But who are they? What do they want?
Some party that's trying to straighten this lot out a bit. Good luck to them, I say, wherever they are. It's more than time somebody did.
But what is it about us? What do they want?
They just said they want you in London, if you can make it safely. If you can't, you're to stand by for further instructions later on. They give lists of people that they want to go to London or Sheffield and other places.
Oh, come on. There's a bottle up at the cottage that I've been keeping in case of something special.
I haven't had a drink since I found a bottle of rum on the beach last year.
Can you tell us any more, Mr. Turner?
Aye. Remember that scientist fellow, Bucker?
But I thought he was...
He's as right as rain.
Oh.
They had him on talking a couple of nights ago, giving a general survey of the position. Well, the main things are that the water's finished raising. Much of the best land's gone, but all the same, Dr. Bucker reckons that if we get organized, we ought to be able to grow enough because they estimate the population's down... to between a fifth and an eighth of what it was. Could be even less.
Oh, that?
Aye. Pneumonia mostly, he said it was. Not much food, you see. No resistance. No medical services. No drugs. And three hellish winters. Ooh, it's taking them off like plague.
But shall we ever get a fair chance to try? I mean, the things are still there on the sea bottom. Suppose they have other weapons they've not used yet.
Oh, ah. Bocker talks about them, too. Reckons that this time they really have.
How?
Well, now they've got some kind of a thing that'll go down in the deep. It puts out ultra something, not ultraviolet. A sort of noise, only you can't hear it.
Ultrasonic?
That's it. Bocker says the waves it puts out and kill underwater.
But have they discovered what the things are down there and what they look like?
No. All Bocker said was that a lot of jelly stuff came up and went bad quickly in the sunlight. No shape to it. Not the pressure to hold things together, see? So what the Watsits look like when they're down on the bottom of the sea is still anybody's guess.
What they look like when they're dead is good enough for me. Let's drink to empty deeps and free seas again.
I am to law and order. It'll be a relief to be able to go to sleep knowing that somebody's doing something about it.
It's going to be a very strange sort of world with only a fifth or an eighth of us left.
Though only 5 million or so of us in the first Elizabeth's time. But we counted. You know, Mike, I was thinking, nothing is really new, is it? Once upon a time, there was a great plain covered with forests and full of wild animals. I expect our ancestors hunted there. And then, one day, the water came in and drowned it all. And there was the North Sea. I think we've been here before, Mike. And we got through the last time.
As soon as we get the boat ready, we'll head north again. We've just about enough fuel to take us to London.
Yes. Yes, let's go as soon as we can.
Vancouver, you have heard the fifth and concluding episode of The Kraken Wakes, a serial adapted by Eric Cameron from the novel by John Wyndham. The following actors were featured in this episode: Sam Payne, Shirley Broderick, Michael Irwin, Daphne Goldrick, Terrence Kelly, Roy Brinson, Derek Ralston, John White, and Alan Routon. Sound effects, Lars Eastholm. The play was directed in the Vancouver studios of the CBC by Norman Newton, with technical operation by Ian Stevens.
CBC Radio Network.